Advices Radio Network.
Advices Radio is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The opinions of the host are not meant to be taken as medical advice. If you have a health concern, see a doctor immediately.
When it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
Welcome back to Advices Radio. I'm your host, Scott McNally. This is episode number 32, and this week we are going to speak with IFBB Pro, Joe Thomas. He is a pro bodybuilder, he's a fitness model, and he's a popular figure in the fitness industry. He's been doing all this stuff for over a decade now. The guy is a hard worker, and it's a really cool thing to see people that are making a living and being successful doing the stuff that they love. So that's exactly what we want to see here at the Advices Radio Network. Later this week, there will be a new episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear with Skip Hill and S2H. I'll be there, of course, holding it down in the background and talking with the guys. I can't wait. After that, at the end of the week, is Bodybuilding Nerds Radio, as always. Comes out on Friday. Go to bodybuildingnerds.com or search iTunes, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. Then this weekend is the Arnold Classic. I will be there. So if you're going to be there, look for me. I'm going to have a handful of t-shirts with me, and if you catch me early enough, I'd be happy to give one to you absolutely free. I'll be there all weekend, along with VJ Perry and Dr. Stephen Ogden on Saturday. We're going to try to plan a meetup, so stay tuned to Facebook at the Advices Radio Facebook page. I'll make an announcement on my own page, too, and that'll be a lot of fun, so please reach out and say hi while we're there. Dr. Scott Stevenson and Jordan Peters will be there too, so look for all of us. Advices Radio is going to be floating all around the show. Let's get to Joe Thomas, and I will see you at the Arnold. Welcome to Advices Radio. I'm your host, Scott McNally, and with me today is IFBB Pro Joe Thomas. He has he's been around the fitness industry for a long time. This guy has been just basically hammering it away for 13 years. He's a fitness model. He's a figure in the fitness industry, and he's a bodybuilder. He's told me that these are three very different aspects of his life, and we're gonna dive into that today. So Joe, thanks for being here, man. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem at all. Good to be here.
This is cool. So, you know, I've been reading up on you, and then a while back, Dr. Scott Stevenson said, you know, you got to meet this guy. You got to talk to him. I guess he said he met you back in about 2010. You guys were competing at the same show. And he said that you're a smart dude. You've been through a lot. You're a hard worker. And you were somebody who would be really great for the Advices Radio audience. So, man, I'm really happy to have you here. To get started, just to kind of back up, you know, tell us just a little bit about your background and how you got into the sport.
Well, that's an easy one because it's pretty much the same background as everybody else. You know, you watch the Arnold Schwarzenegger movies and stuff like that, and you're like, "Ooh, I want to be like that when I get older." And basically, that's the start of it. Is pretty much like everybody else. You know, they're either watching the old school WWF or you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, and then you want to be like them. And that's pretty much how I first started. You know, I always wanted to be a muscular kid. And then, of course, sports, and then started lifting for football and wrestling and things like that. And then it just progressed from there.
Right on. So you had told me that in the past you were more involved in powerlifting. Was that your original direction once you got more serious, or was your physique always kind of like the prime factor when you were training?
Well, I did it a little bit different. I did dabble in some powerlifting, but I was also interested in my physique during that time. What I did back then, and this was a while back, what I did, I actually called it power bodybuilding because I did do powerlifting movements, and I trained with a lot of guys from Westside Barbell that's basically world-renowned powerlifting. And so I did my powerlifting, but then at the end, when everybody was done doing their 10 sets of two, you know, I would rep them out. I also wanted to, yeah, so I did it a little bit differently. So I was into the physical part of what I looked like, but also I wanted to be very powerful. And during that time, I was also playing semi-pro football, so the strength movements helped, like power cleans and deadlifts and things like that.
Okay. So, you know, as we were talking before we got started here, you know, we were talking about your injury. And so for everybody at home, you had basically a catastrophic injury, and this was related to powerlifting.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. I was deadlifting with a bunch of Westside Barbell guys, and I did like pretty much what everybody does. I did something stupid that I shouldn't have done. And
we've all done
something. Breaking my back.
Oh,
yeah,
geez.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Especially doing what we do, you know, you do some stupid stuff sometimes.
Sure.
And I did something stupid. I ended up breaking my back. The bad thing was, it wasn't the actual break in my vertebrae that was the bad part. The bad part was I smashed my disc that was in between my vertebrae. It smashed completely.
Wow.
And basically cracked it open, I guess you can say. And the fluid on the inside just leaked over the years. And basically your disc in between your vertebrae should be like a nice juicy prune.
Yeah.
Well, mine was turning into a shriveled raisin, and it was shrinking and hitting all the nerves in my back. And this was over the years after I kept training around my injury and kept training, hoping it would get better, and it never did. I didn't have insurance during that time.
Okay.
That was the time when I was young and invincible.
Yeah.
So I didn't need any of that stuff, I thought.
Mm. So what's interesting here to me is, for a lot of people, this would be the end of the story. This is where they stopped training, and this is where, you know, somebody took up chess playing or something like that, got into cars maybe, but not for you. Things went different. You, how long did it take to recover? I mean, you break your back. You said you go in for surgery. You had gotten the discs fused, correct?
Well, yeah, this wasn't for years later, though.
I mean,
when I broke my back, I didn't even know. I didn't even know I broke my back. I didn't have any insurance. I just basically said, oh, I hurt my back. And then I laid around for a little while and then basically nursed myself back to health in the gym.
But
then I knew something wasn't right, and I had to train around my injury. And as the years went by, it got kind of worse and worse and worse. And I knew something wasn't right, and I knew it wasn't going to heal completely. So I had to basically train around my injury for years, and I had kind of shrunk for a while.
So you weren't able
really
to
train.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask. Like you weren't able to squat as heavy or deadlift as much anymore.
Yeah.
Okay,
right. Squat was my thing. I mean, I was a beast on the squats, and that's maybe why my legs. You know, I'm kind of known for having really good legs on the stage, and that, you know, that's part of the reason why, because when I was younger, I could squat like crazy and I would go all out. But, you know, ever since my back injury, it's never been the same.
Okay.
And, I actually started competing in 2004, which was a few years after my injury.
Okay.
I just had to work around. I started actually training bodybuilding style as compared to powerlifting style because of my injury, because with bodybuilding is more controlled movements. You focus more on the muscle instead of just throwing weights around.
Yeah.
So I was able to switch to bodybuilding because it was more controlled movements and it was better for my back. So I actually went into competing because, you know, a friend of mine that was competing at the time said, you should compete. You already look like a bodybuilder. Because I've always been lean and I've always been pretty muscular, and he said you should try it. So I said okay, and I did.
Interesting.
That was 2004.
That was
2004 when my first competition.
And how did you do in those early shows?
My first show ever, my goal was to go in and just not get last place. I ended up placing second place.
Nice.
And you got to remember back then, this was 2004. There was no men's physique. There was no bikini. there was bodybuilding, and there was like 27 dudes in every class. And yeah, that's when bodybuilding was, that's when people still liked bodybuilders.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so there was like 27 guys in my class, and I ended up coming in second place. And there was also no novice during this time either. This
okay.
Was just, you either got in the open or you didn't get in. And that's how it was then.
Yeah, very different than today. And that's something that I definitely want to touch on a little bit later, because, you know, there's such a difference between, you know, what bodybuilding was when you and I were younger compared to what, I don't even know if I call it quite bodybuilding now. It's like just the fitness industry as a whole, you know, it's almost a bad thing to say bodybuilding. but
yeah, nowadays it seems like it.
Yeah. But regardless, you know, it sounds like you kept powering on and you kept improving as best you could, working around your injury. What made you decide to finally go in and get the surgery done?
Well, from 2004 to 2008, I competed quite a bit. And to be honest with you, genetically, I had a really good frame, you know, good aesthetics, things like that. I was able to carry muscle pretty well, even with my injury. And I won quite a few overalls. I mean, at pretty big national qualifiers all over the country. I was doing really good. And 2008, I won my last overall, and I could tell, that wasn't my last overall, but I came in and won my last overall for that season.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I can tell I got to do something with my back. This is getting to the point where I'm not sure if I can handle this, because the nerve pain was just unbearable. And 2009, I didn't compete. That was the only year that I didn't compete.
I see.
And that's because I just couldn't. I mean, I just couldn't do it. I mean, I still went and did all my events and appearances all over the country for the fitness industry, but I didn't get on stage because my back was just... my back was done, and I knew I had to do something. So finally, in January of 2010, that's when I finally had the spinal fusion. And I had talked to a buddy of mine that used to be an UFC fighter. His name's Nate Corey. He told me all about this brand new technology back surgery called an X-lift procedure.
Okay.
And they go through your side instead of cutting your back open. In the middle of your back, they don't cut your back open. They put like a little, you know, 2-inch hole in your side, and they were actually able to fuse my spine through that little hole in my side. And I had like a prosthetic disc and everything. I mean, it's top notch surgery that I had. And you know, I basically, after that surgery, because it's so minimally invasive, that I was able to rehab myself and get off the pain meds and everything in 3 weeks. I was able to get back into the gym.
Wow. That's unheard of, man.
It pretty much is, because a lot of people are so scared of the back surgeries.
People
may not be the same anymore. But luckily for me, I mean, I'm very thankful that 3 weeks off pain meds in the gym, rehabbing myself, and ended up competing later on in the year and won another overall.
Wow.
And that's the same year that I met Dr. Scott at a national show, where I placed fifth, I believe, at a national show. That same year I had back surgery.
Okay. So what happened from there? It sounds like everything just started, I'm going to guess, kept moving upward. And how is the back now, just out of curiosity? Does it still give you issues? Or?
Well, yeah, I mean, my back's never going to be the same ever again. I mean, I still can't, you know, I still can't throw around heavy squats. I still can't, you know, do certain things exactly the way I would have been able to do it before. But I was able, like, right after my surgery. Now, after 2010, I made it back. I looked great. But after I had a little bit more time to heal, I just put on more size and more size, because I could actually start squatting again and deadlifting again and things like that. And by 2012, that's when I realized, because it took me a couple of years to get it where I wanted to be. So 2012 is when I realized, that's when I placed top five at, I believe that's when I placed top five at the big national show.
Okay.
It was at the USA, I believe. And that's when I realized, like, hey, I can actually do this. I may be able to actually earn my pro card at some point.
Wow.
So I'm not exactly sure on the dates of the shows. I've done so many, I can't remember.
But I'm sure.
I just remember in 2012 is when I realized that I think I may be able to do this because my back was feeling better. You know, I put on the size. You know, I literally was competing at some point. I competed at 205 in the heavyweight division.
And barely, how tall are you?
5'9", like okay. Maybe 5'9¼".
Okay, yeah.
And I was, you know, and I won a lot of overalls at national qualifiers at 205, maybe 208. But now, you know, after my back was healed, I was competing at 225, barely making heavyweight division.
Nice, nice. It sounds like just a switch was flipped. I mean, you know, comparing, I can't envision looking at your physique today. I can't envision you at like 205. I mean, what are you competing at nowadays?
Well, when I actually won my pro card, finally in 2016, I was about 224 pounds on stage.
Okay.
By the time I hit the stage, I was about 224. The thing was, I for that show, they have weird weight classes. So I actually had to make 220 pounds.
No kidding.
220 pound weight class. Yeah.
Okay.
So I didn't eat anything on the day I weighed in on the plane or anything. Went and weighed in, I weighed 219.8. somewhere around there. And then by the time I hit the stage again, I was probably around 224 because I had 2 days after I weighed in before I hit the stage.
And now for
John Meadows had me eating a bunch of carbs after that.
That's what I was just going to ask you. So you were working with John for that show. Were you following his training ideas as well?
Yeah, we... luckily John lives right here in Columbus where I live.
Yeah.
And, we only live about a half hour away from each other. And so we were actually able to train together on many occasions.
That's awesome.
So, that's great that I was able to do that. Cause you know, he works with all these different people and they don't even get to see him. And I got to train with him on multiple occasions and you know, apply his techniques, his mountain dog training. And I did do the training, I did the diet, I just basically said, hey, whatever you tell me to do, I'm gonna do it, which is tough for me because I've done everything myself. For most of my career. I've done everything myself. I'm a very alpha personality. It's hard for me to just release control and say, hey, you take the wheel, you know?
Sure.
But I did that with John, and it was tough, but I did.
You know, I found that for myself, following a lot of John's ideas with back training, it helped me a lot. I've had a lot of lower back issues, SI issues, and that was one of the reasons I asked if you followed his training. Do you feel that training style helped even to strengthen your lower back up more?
Well, one thing that I really like about his training style is that it's basically a way that you can still put on muscle, even though none of us are spring chickens anymore.
Right.
We can still put on muscle. So none of us, I mean, we can all put on muscle, but avoid injury.
That's yes.
John's number one thing that he has with the mountain dog training is that you can still go, you know, balls to the wall and... but not hurt yourself doing it. You know, his mountain dog training is actually really good for that. It's perfect for someone that's been banging weights and competing or whatever for years and looking to make a change.
Yeah.
But also wants to avoid injury.
Man, no kidding.
Because none of us want to get injured.
No kidding. And especially, yeah, for me, you know, and I'm sure you've had to get really creative just to protect that low back. Because, I mean, I want everybody out there to know, too, you know, Joe's saying that he couldn't squat like he used to. Your legs are ridiculous, man. Your quads are huge, you know, and I have to think that you've gotten smarter and you've learned how to train those muscles hard without having to just rely on, you know, heavy weights for low reps.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I spent years basically creating things, trying to work around my injury and figuring out what I can do that would tax the muscle the most without injuring myself again or hurting my lower back or things like that. And to be honest with you, I don't squat that much, and people don't want to hear that, or they just can't believe it when they see my legs, that they're like, you don't squat. But I mean, I did a load of squats. I did a load of squats, you know, before I hurt my back. But there's still things like, there's still hack squats, there's still leg press, there's still, you know, and it's also how, what kind of mind muscle connection that you have to your body parts, you know, and that can make a world of a difference. You know, you don't have to put on, you know, 4,000 pounds on the leg press and do half reps to build quads. You know what I mean? You can, I mean, there's smarter ways to do it, and you can really tax the muscle. And that's what bodybuilding is all about. It's about, you know, taxing the muscle, not destroying it, you know?
Like,
you don't want to annihilate it. You want to stimulate your muscles.
Yeah. I think that this is a huge take home message too, because I think a lot of people get hurt and all they know, you know, is all they know about training is the same thing they've always done. And when they can't do that anymore, then they get, you know, they get close-minded and they think, well, there's not another way. I think that you're a great example of somebody that if you want something bad enough, you're going to figure it out.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You got to adapt. You basically have to adapt.
So 2016, you turned pro at Team Universe, but you had been grinding and busting your butt for years, a decade before that. And one thing we haven't talked about yet is, you know, not only were you working hard in this respect and working hard on your physique, but you are also a fitness model and you've been supporting yourself through that. And you're a figure in the fitness industry. You're a sponsored athlete. You know, you're making a living through the sport you love. These things all kind of go hand in hand, but in a way they're, as you were telling me before, they're kind of like equally unique aspects of your life. Am I saying that right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're exactly right. I've been a professional published fitness model since 2004. So, what is that? We're 13 years.
Yeah.
I've also been competing, since, 2004. I take that back. I've been a published international fitness model since 2005.
Okay.
I've been competing since 2004. And also have been working in the industry since 2005. And all three of these are connected, but they are different. Like I was telling you before, you can compete and like most people do, most people that compete have nothing to do with working in the industry. And they also don't do fitness modeling. But then again, you do have people that compete and do fitness modeling, but they don't do the industry.
Hmm.
Not that they don't want to, but they just don't. And then you also got people that just do fitness modeling, don't work in the industry or compete. So you can do any of these on their own or all three together. Most people don't do all three together.
Hmm.
Nowadays though, with, men's physique guys, a lot of those guys are doing all three. Like they'll work in the industry and then they'll do, fitness modeling and then also competing. But there's not a lot of bodybuilders that do all three, especially nowadays.
What do you mean by working in the industry?
Well, as far as you can actually work in the industry and not even compete or be a fitness model. There's a lot of people that are YouTube sensations nowadays that are actually, you know, working in the fitness industry. For instance, they'll be at all the expos all over the country because these companies are paying them to be there because they have a large Instagram following or a large YouTube following. And they might have there's special little show where they, you know, rate supplements or where they do workout videos or something and people like them. And
I see.
And so basically they just become Instagram famous.
Okay.
And these companies hire them to work in the industry, even though they don't compete or do modeling.
Yeah. It's so different than when you and I started years ago, isn't it?
Well, yeah. When I first started in the industry, there was no social media. There was MySpace, but nobody knew how to use MySpace as far as like what they do like with Facebook.
Yeah.
All there was back then when I first started, I was basically plastered in every magazine all over the world, you know. Italy, Spain, Germany, South America, I was in every magazine all over the world for years. And also there were, what do they call them? Message boards, like on RxMuscle.com or Bodybuilding.com the MuscularDevelopment.com. There were all the different message boards, and that's where a lot of the bodybuilders and people went, because there was no Facebook where everybody talked about everything, you know, where you had every bit of information at your fingertips.
Right.
So when I first started, that's what it was. And then I saw a change coming, you know, and I was like, all this social media stuff, what is this Facebook stuff? I you know, everybody's doing this now and it's making a big difference. I got to jump on board with this.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, that's the reason why I've been able to stay relevant in this industry, even as a bodybuilder, because we all know we'll have to face the truth. We all know that most people don't really like bodybuilding anymore. Hmm. I mean, we're just too big. We're unattainable and all that other stuff, whatever they want to say. We're not aesthetic, whatever they want to say. But I've been able to stay relevant for different reasons. For one is because I saw the change coming in the industry. I jumped onto social media and I did what I could to build that social media. And luckily I already had a name for myself in the industry, because of the magazine ads and everything like that. So I started off better than some other people. So I was able to build it pretty quick. And then another reason why I'm still relevant in the industry is because even though I am a bodybuilder, I'm not a meathead, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I have a personality. I've been a people person, and that's one of the reasons why these companies, they hire me, and they sign me to contracts, is because I can draw people to their booths, and I can draw people to the supplements, through ads and through social media, because I'm the person that will talk to anybody. You know, I'm not the meathead guy that'll look at his watch and flex his arm and say, I got to go to the gym. You know, it's just, you know, yeah. That's what these companies are looking at all bodybuilders nowadays. And they think that's what they're going to get.
Yeah.
But for me, luckily, like I said, I've been able to change with the times and to also be able to be a very marketable person. I'm not too big. You know, I'm not 6'1" at 380 pounds, you know, which people used to like that. They don't like it anymore. I guess one company I worked for before, they called me deceivingly obtainable. Which was really smart, because, you know, people would look at me and say, okay, I can never look like Victor Martinez or Jay Cutler. I can never look like that. But this guy, he has a great physique. I could look like him one day.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, which
probably not, but
is definitely more obtainable than being, you know, top in the world guy like Jay Cutler, you know.
Sure.
But yeah, so they used to call me deceivingly attainable, which makes sense.
Yeah, that's funny, man. So, you know, I'll tell you that it seems like just everything I look at on social media, and especially the younger people I talk to, the idea of being a sponsored athlete is, it seems like it's this top priority in people's minds. They don't even have a concept of, you know, how to diet for their first show, but they're already looking to become like a brand ambassador for this or that. Yeah. And that they'll just take whatever comes along, man. I mean, can you please, for the newer listeners out there, explain to me what it means to be a real sponsored athlete?
Yeah, this is a kind of a touchy situation for a lot of people, especially a lot of the bodybuilders that were in the industry before that were actual sponsored athletes, because they were looked at like, okay, this guy, he's won all these overalls. He's a national competitor now. He's building his way up. He put some time in. He's put some work in.
Sure.
Okay, that used to be the lower level sponsored athletes that the companies would bring on. But then you'd have your big sponsored athletes, like the top 10 in the world guys, you know.
Yeah.
So basically, with the introduction of other classes in competing, like for instance bikini and men's physique and classic physique and everything like that. That was very smart as far as the NPC and IFBB is concerned, But as far as the fitness industry itself, it really hurt the fitness industry for bodybuilders. Because a lot of guys were just coming in, and girls were just flooding the industry with these new people were just flooding the industry and basically saying, hey, we're relevant now. Hey, can someone give me a bucket of protein and I'll do everything for free. So they came in the industry and basically just hoard themselves out for supplements just to get it, try to get a name for themselves. And they messed up the industry as far as actual paid sponsored athletes go, especially for bodybuilders. They messed that up for a lot of people by doing that. It's the same as if you have a business, if you're running a business and another company comes in this, your same city running the same business and undercut you. That's going to mess up your business. It's basically what happened. So yeah, that's kind of a touchy situation for a lot of people, but you know, if you keep yourself relevant in the industry, luckily, like I was able to, and you're marketable, you should still be able to, and you got to have a social media following. I can tell you, for all you people out there listening that want to get a sponsorship or whatever, you are not going to do it at all. I don't care what you've accomplished, what you've done, no matter what, unless you have a social media following that's at least decent. And if you have a decent social media following, then you may be able to be an ambassador or something like that. If you want to be any kind of sponsored athlete, you're going to have a huge social media following, and not just bought and paid for Instagram followers. You got to have like actual interaction, because if not, they're not going to get picked up at all. That's just the way it is. I mean, there's guys that are getting picked up for quote-unquote athlete sponsorships that's done nothing. That's absolutely accomplished nothing as far as competing or whatever is concerned. They might have done one show, but guess what? They got a huge YouTube following because they hold supplements up and cuss at them. You know, something like that. You know what I mean? So they get signed to a contract, and then you got these guys that's competed in 10 shows and won 8 out of 10 shows in a high-level national competitor, and they can't get anything because their social media is basically nothing.
Now, you know, this is a bodybuilding-based show, and that's the stuff I love to talk about. There's, I would love right now to ask you more about, like, the work that you and John had done together, but realistically, I think the most valid question I got to ask you right now is about this social media stuff. Like, I mean, as funny as it is, this is an important topic here. How much time a day do you spend working on social media? How do you manage that? Because from what I understand, it's like it can be like a full time job. There's a lot of strategy to it, and what has made you successful at it?
Well, absolutely. There's definitely you can't just go about it and just post stuff like whatever you want and just, you know, anytime you want. I mean, there is a strategy to it. But the strategy doesn't really come along as much until you get a bigger following. Once you start getting a bigger following, you definitely have to gear it towards your type of followers. You basically have to figure out what type of followers you have. You have to figure out what times are the appropriate times to post things on your social media. Like, for instance, Facebook and Instagram could be completely different when it comes to different times to post things. Like, for instance, for me, I like to post Instagram stuff in the morning. On Facebook, I post stuff later in the evening. That's my followers, though. You know, it all depends on your followers, and that comes with trial and error, you know, of years of building it up. See, for me, my social media built up to where it is rather slowly, just over the years. So I've been able to really go with a lot of trial and error and figure out, you know, how things go. And then you also have, like, you know, ups and downs. Like, sometimes, like, I'll post something on Instagram and I'll get, you know, 1,100 likes on it in 3 hours. But then sometimes I post something and then I'll have, like, 300 likes on it. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, I like this picture better than that one. But you know what I mean? Like, and then other times you'll go a month and have a, you know, like all your following, and all your likes and all your interactions are higher. And then all of a sudden you'll go a month and everything seems to drop. It's really weird, and it's very strategic. And anybody that, I mean, and I have a pretty decent social media following, but there's other people that have like ridiculous followings, and it has to be, you know, really strategic if they're promoting a business or promoting themselves. But then once you get to a certain point where if you have 2 million followers on Instagram, it doesn't matter what you post, you're going to get 40,000 likes on it. It's not going to, you know what I mean? It's not going to matter, but there's still some kind of strategy that if you want to promote yourself properly, there's got to be some type of strategy to it.
It's amazing. I'm sure you didn't think about any of this back when you were just lifting weights and, you know, having fun with it, right?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I didn't think anything about that. That's when I was talking about when I noticed the change in the industry. Yeah. That's when I started doing all that. That's the change that I noticed.
Okay.
One other point I wanted to touch on the social media thing too is nobody, you know, how I've been able to be successful on my social media is nobody wants to see me doing arm curls every freaking post. Nobody wants to see me doing squats every single post. Mm. Nobody wants to see me holding up this, and this is very important. All the sponsors that I've been with, and I have five now, nobody wants to see me holding up a container of protein and say, hey, buy this. This is great protein.
Really?
No one wants to see that. All. Yeah, no one. Yeah, that's the least thing that people want to see.
Interesting.
That's the least thing that people want to see. I could post a picture of me holding a parakeet and get 600 likes on it on Facebook.
Yeah.
And then I could post a picture of me in the gym banging some weights, and it's an ad for whatever I'm representing.
Yeah.
And it'll get like, you know, 400 likes or something like, right. I'm just guessing the likes, but you get what I'm saying. Like,
yeah,
people don't want to always see that stuff. And if you post a gym workout every single time, people are going to get tired of that. You know, you have to be, and that's where the marketability comes in. You have to be a more marketable person. Like, for instance, I'll give you an example. I use a lot of humor in my social media. I always try to be funny. And every once in a while, you know, I'll just post like an ad, you know, representing one of my sponsors or something like that.
Sure.
But for the most part, I really try to add a lot of humor in. And, you know, something else is big right now. People like food.
Yeah.
You know, so you want to, you know, post stuff that has to do with that. No one wants to see me, you know, doing a workout every single time, but those are important too. There is a time for those. So on my social media, if you go on my social media, you'll see that I have a mixture of, you know, training videos, inspirational stuff, funny stuff, you know, hardcore pictures, a picture of me doing a handstand, you know, just something different all the time. You know, you gotta be, if you want to have a successful, social media, you gotta give your followers something different to look at all the time. And humor never goes wrong. I mean, if you actually have a sense of humor, you need to use it on your social media. Like, for instance, I have a whole series on my Facebook. I have a series called Plane Trip Pictures.
Okay.
And Road Trip Pictures.
I saw the plane. Yeah, I saw the plane pictures. What are those all about?
Well, yeah, see, that's a lot of my followers get a kick out of the plane trip pictures because, you know, I think I'm on like part 80 or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a plane trip series part 80 or whatever I'm on. But every single picture that I've ever taken on a plane has been with whoever I'm sitting next to.
Okay.
I don't even know these people. and I get a whole crowd of people all around me posing for pictures and everything. I don't even know these. I just met them 5 minutes earlier.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what the humor is about. It is when I first started posting them, people would say, is that your mom or is that your brother or is that your son or whoever's sitting next to me? They would say, who are those people? And I have no idea. I just met these people. So I literally made a whole series out of taking pictures with random strangers that I have no idea who they are and that I just met 5 minutes before.
So you get on the plane. Do you tell them what you're doing? Do you say, hey, this is part of my plane trip series? Or you just say, hey, you mind if I take a quick picture with you?
I've done both.
Okay.
Mostly what I do is I'll grab my phone and I'll pull it up and I'll say, hey, I have a pretty large social media following, and what I do is I do a plane trip series, and I actually go to my plane trip series album and I show them. And I flip through it and say, see, I just take a picture with whoever's next, and you're next. And, and they're like, oh, okay, great. I mean, I've only had, out of all these years, I've only had maybe a couple people say no.
Okay.
I'm just not comfortable with that. Okay, whatever, I'll take a picture with that guy then. The other guy over here, you know.
Sure.
So, you know, and there's been some of them that, you know, it was 5 o'clock in the morning flight. Nobody's even around me, so I just take a selfie on a plane.
Right.
Or take it with the the plane chick, the chick that works on the plane.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, you bring up another point here with everything you're doing. You know, you're keeping your physique, you know, in shape. Looks like you probably stay in shape. Probably, I'm guessing, close to year round, so you can keep doing shoots. Am I right about this?
Yeah, there is. I'll always have abs, put it that way. Whether I'm 230 or 260, I'm going to have abs. Now they'll be different looking abs, but I still have them.
Yeah,
they'll still be there. And the reason why is because, you know, I still have to make appearances when I'm 260. I still have to make appearances, and there's also some photo shoots that I can do at 260, like for the clothing lines that I represent. I can still do those. Now, I do a lot of different professional modeling, like, for instance, advertisement modeling for, like, clothing lines, things like that. And then also I'll do, like, I'm a freelance fitness model, which I do, like, I guess you can call, like, sexy modeling or whatever.
Okay.
You know, whatever kind of modeling you want to call it. But it's just fitness modeling. I've done, you know, couples modeling, like, with a female model. And also I just released my first solo calendar.
Nice. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thanks. I really appreciate that. I've been in other calendars with other people, but this is my very first solo calendar. So it's a 2017 calendar. So I just released that.
This sounds like in
and
itself.
And if anybody out there wants one, go to jt-joethomas.com/shop and that'll take you right to my calendar.
And if you didn't write that down yet, at the end we'll make sure to plug everything. So we'll get that address again. We'll get all your social media, websites, everything else. But you know what I was gonna say is, it sounds like you're super busy with this too. I mean, trying to run social media, trying to have a physique, trying to compete as an IFBB pro, plus modeling. It sounds like you're on airplanes a lot. How many trips do you figure you're taking a year on an airplane? If you can count it.
Yeah, to be honest with you, this past year of 2016, I don't even know.
Wow.
I can't even remember.
That's amazing.
Because also, yeah, I have to get on a plane to compete too when I compete. Because I competed when I won my pro card, I had to fly out to Jersey.
Yeah.
And then when I competed in my first pro show, which was 4 weeks later, which was at the Tampa Pro, I flew out there, and I've literally been to Florida 6 times this year. Or it's 2016.
Okay.
And plus that doesn't even count everywhere else that I've been. I just got back from LA. Like a few days ago, you know, so I'm all over the place. I don't even know how many times I've been on a plane just like in 2016, 2017.
You know, I'll have one of my nutritional clients say, hey, I'm going to be out of town for 4 days. And I don't know what to do. My diet is going to fall apart. I understand, you know, you could really do anything for 4 days, but you must have a hell of a system to be able to maintain and build a physique while traveling this much.
Yeah, it's trial and error for one. And I really have done a pretty good job, I'd have to say, at being able to be really efficient at packing my food and things like that. Like, you know, if I go to an event and I have to be gone for 3 days, that's 21 meals I got to pack and take with me.
So you take it all. You take it all, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
I have an ISO bag that I use, like one of those cooler bags.
Yeah.
And I just, I don't use the containers. I have to just, I cook everything and stuff it all in Ziploc bags and label it meal one, meal two, meal three on this whatever day. And I stuff it all inside my carry-on.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm literally, you know, I put my bag on the belt at the airport, and every time they're like, okay, we got to check this bag. We don't know what this stuff is.
Yeah.
And it's 20 pounds of food in my bag.
Oh man.
But I luckily for competitions though, one of my sponsors is Fit Food RX.
Okay.
And they, at my competitions, they'll actually supply meals. Like, I get to my hotel and the meals will already be there waiting for me, everything I need.
Oh, that's perfect, man.
Yeah, that helps out so much. It takes so much stress off of competing. Like when I actually have to compete, you know, I don't have to worry about packing, you know, all those meals and everything I need. I can just go to where I need to go and I'll have my meals. And if I need anything else, I'll just run to the store real quick. But, yeah, that makes it so much better.
So you're traveling around all over the country and basically all around the world. I mean, the food is that's one big thing, but then also finding a gym. It sounds like, you know, just the planning it would take to go away for, let's say, 5-6 days to do a shoot somewhere, it would take a ton of preparation. So when you walk out the door, you're bringing your food with you. Do you know, like, where the gym is going to be? Is all this stuff set up in your head, or do you wing that?
Well, I have a couple of different systems with that. One of them is most of my photo shoots are done after competing.
I
wait until after my shows to do the photo shoots. So it's if I was doing photo shoots and dieting, like, you know, before a show, it would be really hard. I mean, that would suck. Not that I've never done it before, and not that I can't do it, but just it's terrible. So I usually wait until after I compete. And then I'm free to do, I just do, bam, photo shoot after photo shoot after photo shoot after photo shoot when I'm done competing, just knock them all out. Because I always stay in shoot shape for as long as I need to after a show. If I need to be in it for 3 months, I will be. But as far as training's concerned, if I'm dieting and I know I have to go somewhere, what I'll do is... I'll knock out all the big stuff. Like, I'll change my schedule up a little bit and I'll knock out like back and legs and things like that before I actually have to leave, and then just leave it to the point where, okay, all I need to do is chest and arms or shoulders, which at most hotels, they have things for those.
Okay. So you'll, no, I can't, I gotcha.
Yeah. I can't do a heavy leg day or heavy back day where I'm doing deadlifts or squats or leg press at a hotel usually.
Right.
So,
right.
So I'll knock those out first before I have to go away. And then when I'm gone, it's usually only between 3 to 6 days, but sometimes it's been longer. And if it's longer, then I try to make sure I have a gym or something like that ready to go. But usually it's three to five days or something like that. So, I'll usually knock out all the big stuff, and then that just leaves like arms, shoulders, chest, which you can pretty much do that at any hotel.
Gotcha. Yeah, that sounds easy enough then. Has your have you noticed a change in your popularity since you became an IFBB pro? Has this affected your career positively?
Not really.
Really? No kidding. No kidding.
No, not. Well, no, because I mean, I've already been in the industry for, you know, for 12 years before I turned pro. You know what I mean? So turning pro, you know, so this is what I have explained it to people before. There's people that follow bodybuilding, and then there's people that follow bodybuilding and the fitness industry.
Yeah.
And then there's people that don't know anything about bodybuilding, but they follow the fitness industry. Like they follow all like the, you know, the fitness models and the fitness industry guys and girls that work in the industry and stuff like that. But they don't know anything about competing.
Sure.
So again, that shows the separation between fitness modeling, competing, and industry, even though they are connected. You have fans from all three. Like I have fans for fitness modeling that don't know anything about the industry or anything about competing. They just are fans because of modeling. And then you got fans that know all three. Yeah, so again, that shows how it's separated but all connected. And for me, you know, I've been in the industry, I've been a fitness model, and I've been competing at a high level for years.
Yeah.
And so it really didn't change much. I mean, yeah, I'm sure that having that label IFBB Pro will may open up more opportunities and things like that. But I've been a sponsored athlete for years and years. You know, a lot of people, you know, if they turn pro, then, hey, now I should be able to get a sponsorship.
Yeah.
You know, but for me, it was just nothing changed except for the most important part was I did it for me. That's something that I really wanted to, I was really obsessed with doing that just because I wanted it for me. You know, I wanted it to basically to say that, hey, I'm part of a brotherhood, the IFBB bodybuilders, that there's not very many people in this world that can say that.
Absolutely.
And I'm proud to be able to say that I've accomplished that because I busted my ass for that. And it's something that I really wanted to accomplish before, you know, cause I've accomplished everything in bodybuilding and fitness industry and modeling and everything. I mean, I've been on the cover of magazines. I've been in every single magazine. I've won 10 overalls in my career at national qualifiers. As far as the fitness industry, I mean, I've had 25-foot posters hanging on me from the ceiling at the Olympia. You know what I'm saying? I've done all this except for getting my IFBB Pro card.
Yeah.
And once I realized that that was a possibility, I set my mind to that, and I wasn't going to stop until it happened. I don't care if I had to compete till I was 50 years old. I was going to get that pro card.
That's because badass,
that's just how
man.
I am. When I put my mind to something, I'm going to do it.
That's badass.
Or at least I'm going to try. I'm going to try to do it, you know.
And it speaks to, I think, your work ethic that I'm seeing in all these different aspects of your life. You know, I mean, you've had to work just as hard for everything you've done in the fitness industry, and I'm sure just as hard, you know, in fitness modeling. It's just a reflection, you know, of that too.
Well, yeah, with the fitness modeling, I was able to, like, when I was posting, like, for instance, on social media, when I started building my social media,
yeah,
a lot of the photographers will see bodybuilders and things like that. And they'll see some of the bodybuilders, and some of the bodybuilders are like, well, hey, they have potential to do some modeling.
Okay.
And plus with me, I started off, doing advertisement modeling, like right off the bat. 2005, I was in every magazine all over the world. So I was already known for that. At that point, I hadn't done any like the fitness modeling part, like the freelance fitness modeling, like, you know, like the stuff you see, like where I'm on the beach, you know,
yeah,
looking out at the sunset or something, you know, that kind of stuff. But I was doing advertisement modeling and things like that for different sponsors in all magazines. So I already had that going for me. I was already known for that. So when I started showing that stuff on social media, I was able to link up with a lot of predominant and amazing fitness photographers too.
I see.
Like that just do just fitness and not, you know, advertisement. And they do some advertisement too, but a lot of times it's fitness. Like, for instance, I was lucky enough early on in my actual fitness modeling. I believe it was 2006.
Okay.
I believe it was like the first time I ever did actual just fitness modeling, like not the advertisement part. And I was lucky enough to connect with a big time photographer named Ulrich Ullman.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, he's really predominant. One of the top fitness photographers in the world right now. So that was lucky to be one of my first fitness modeling experiences, and it just accelerated from there. And just once, you know, all the other photographers saw me doing work with him, it just blew up from there. So you know, that's the fitness modeling part has done, you know, has been a great part of my life. I've really enjoyed a lot of that, and it's great that I'm still able to do it now after going on 13 years.
Yeah, that's, you know, and I think, like we were talking too, man, I think it's that you're more than, you know, you're not just like a meathead here. you're a businessman basically, and you know, you're making these things happen. But it sounds like you are, you must be so busy because you're doing all these things. Plus, we've talked about you know, you do acting, and that's something you want to get back into, right? And you're a chef as well.
These, yeah.
There's like we don't even have enough room in the podcast to talk about all this stuff. But tell me a little bit about being a chef, and tell me what your future goals are, getting into more acting.
Well, in 2007, when I was still, you know, just when I just a couple of years after I got into the industry and stuff like that, I just I always had a passion for cooking, and yeah. Finally, I just took it to the next level and actually took schooling for it. So, so that way, I actually have actual schooling for culinary under my belt. And that may be something that when I'm done doing all this stuff that I'm doing, you know, it may be something I want to get back to as far as culinary, like maybe opening up a restaurant, you know,
when I'm
done doing everything that I do with this. Yeah, I would love that. I mean, I have a lot of ideas for that type of stuff, and it's something that I may look into when I'm done doing everything that I'm doing. But then that depends on what your next question was, getting back into acting.
Yeah.
I've been in 5 films. And I've been in, I'm sure that a lot of people's heard of the movie Beowulf. I was in that film. That was a pretty big deal for me. That was pretty awesome. Angelina Jolie and Anthony Hopkins were in that one.
No kidding.
That was pretty cool. It was an animated, that Beowulf was an animated version. So basically they just used my body as one of the characters in the film. So that was cool. But I was also in another Beowulf film that was actually a live version, and it was filmed in Norway.
No kidding.
And there was that was an amazing experience in my life. I mean, Norway is absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, every picture that you take, you could send it to National Geographic and they could use it.
Nice.
It's ridiculous.
I would love to see it. I've heard it's so beautiful.
Oh, I mean, and the people over there, you can't even, like, nobody there will ever, like, you'll never catch somebody over there throw, like, a gum wrapper on the ground.
No
they,
kidding.
They just don't do that. No, yeah, they just don't do that.
That's like, awesome.
That's like, they look at it like, because you got to remember, they're over there, I mean, we're talking thousands and thousands of years of heritage.
Yeah.
You know, unlike in the United States, we're all just immigrants.
Yeah.
That been here for, you know, a couple hundred years. You know, they have thousands of years of family past that they look at. The, over there is completely different.
And they respect
anyway,
the land.
That's a whole nother podcast right there.
Yeah. It sounds very different than Columbus or Detroit. That's for sure.
It's completely different from the United States, period. It's so awesome over there. You know, they really respect their ancestors and their land and stuff like that.
But, so, are you thinking about shifting gears back then to getting more into acting in the future, or what's the idea? Yeah.
Yeah. That was one of my major goals. The last time I did any kind of acting at all was early 2011. And ever since then, it's just been on the back burner because I've really been focusing on my fitness industry stuff and also competing, because that's what was really, you know, that's how I was making my money, was the modeling and the fitness industry and the stuff like that. Not bodybuilding. I didn't make any money from that, but that stuff, you know, I was making money from. The acting really wasn't bringing in a lot of money at the time. So I'm like, you know, I have to put this on the back burner and really focus on this first.
Okay.
Build my way up and accomplish my goals in this fitness industry and bodybuilding and all that stuff and my modeling. So that's what I did. And then after a while, I told myself, okay, if I, you know, once I get my pro card, acting is going back on the front burner and not the back burner anymore.
Hmm.
And that's exactly what's going to happen. Now that I've turned pro, you know, I've accomplished that. And now acting's going on the front burner again. And there's a lot of stuff that I still want to accomplish with that. I would hate to say that, you know, I didn't go give it another try, that I just gave up, because that obviously that's not me. I don't give up on things. So I'm going to go give it another try. And I feel like I have a lot to offer that other people might not be able to offer. You know, me being built the way I am, but actually being able to really act,
right?
You know, and also, you know, with my personality. Also, I'm interested in voiceover work. You know, I'm definitely ready to go back out to LA. I just got back from there, by the way, but I'm ready to go back out there and set up shop for a couple weeks and do what I need to do, make contacts, get new headshots, all that stuff. And then I'll come back and then I'll go back again, you know, as many times as I need to rebuild myself in that. You know, I got somewhat of my leftover resume from before, but, you know, I need to build that back up again. And, you know, hopefully I can, make a, you know, I don't think I'm going to be a superstar, but I'd like to make a living doing it. You know, I'd like to make a living, you know, playing characters. I've done pretty good at it in the past, and I feel like I could do it on a little bit higher level.
Well, if it's you know, if we can take anything from your life, we can see, you know, how successful you've been in all these aspects we've talked about, between, you know, modeling and being in the fitness industry, in bodybuilding, the energy and drive it took to recover from your injury. I mean, I feel like that it's all coming from the same well. You know what I mean? It's all coming from the same person in the same place. And I'm confident that if you were to invest that same energy into this or into being a chef, it's gonna happen. So I got one more question for you, and that is just what do you suggest to all the listeners out there? Because I think there's probably a lot of people that are really inspired by everything you're saying, and you know, there's a lot of areas that I think people will be able to relate to you. I have, you know, friends and clients and people that are listening that have maybe even are dealing with back injuries now or some type of a debilitating injury, and they're maybe even contemplating giving up. You know, we've got people out there that are interested in being successful in the fitness industry. We've got people that are trying to be more successful as bodybuilders and being the best they can be on stage. So like I said, I think there's a lot of people that can relate to you in a lot of different ways. What advice would you give to them?
Well, that was about a 10-part question. But
In general, because like I said, I feel like for you, this all comes from the same well. The drive and the energy it took to work through your back injury was probably very similar to the drive and energy it took to be successful in all these other aspects.
Right. One thing that I always tell everybody, if anybody goes back and looks at any of my interviews that I've ever done, when this type of questions come up, I always say, well, I say a lot of things, but one thing that I say all the time is consistency. Mm. And if you really think about consistency, it goes pretty much in every aspect of your life. You'll never, ever be, nobody will be successful without consistency. Well, except for people that's been handed stuff, obviously that's a different story.
Sure.
But if you're working your way up somewhere, you have to stay consistent. And that goes with anything. If you want to improve for the stage, if you're not consistently trying to improve, like if you're not going to the gym on a regular basis, if your food is not on point, meaning most of the time for people it's not eating enough, you know, if you're not doing all these things and staying consistent with it, you're not going to make any changes. You're not going to make any changes without consistency. And that goes the same for the fitness industry. Even if you go and send an email to somebody and they say, oh no, we're not looking for anybody at this time, and you say, well, I tried. Yeah. How are you going to get anywhere like that? You have to stay consistent. You have to keep grinding and keep going for it. I mean, most of the time things aren't handed to people most of the time. The way some people are acting nowadays, it seems like they are, but from what I've dealt with, most times people aren't handed things, and you have to stay consistent and you have to keep grinding and, you know, and as far as, like you said, injuries, you got to figure out a way to work around that injury. You know, you got to do what you got to do to work around that injury, of course, also you want to get it looked at and try to see if something can be done about it. But in the meantime, you got to work around that injury. I mean, I've seen so many people, you know, oh, I stopped working out because I broke my arm.
Yeah.
Well, your legs aren't broke. You know what I'm saying? Like, how are you going to reach your goals if, you know, if you broke your arm and you stay out of the gym? I mean, do leg press, do some leg extensions, leg curls, get on the treadmill. I mean, you can always do something. You can't let, there's going to be bumps in the road. There's going to be roadblocks. I mean, mm-hmm. You got to figure out a way to get around those. And, you know, you have to, or else most likely you're not going to be successful at anything if you don't, you don't stay consistent in grinding towards that goal.
I think that's great advice, and it makes sense. I think in all aspects. I'll have to pick your brain here in the future about social media, man. I find it's like a full time thing, just trying to keep the Advices Radio page running.
Yeah, it is, man. It really is. Social media is not easy, and the minute you aren't on it, it's almost like you're like irrelevant. You know what I'm saying? And like the minute your face is not out there, they forget about you, and that's pretty much in every industry. Hmm. You know, that's the reason. Like with acting, yeah, I did. I've been in 5 films. I've done a few things. Yeah, they were low budget, 2 o'clock in the morning sci-fi films. But hey,
you were out there.
I did it.
Yeah,
the thing is, you know, now that I've been out of it, I'm irrelevant in there.
Mm.
I mean, I have to start over because my face has been out of it for a while. Luckily, I got a little bit of a resume to have at least to get me a start.
Yeah.
But I basically have to start over. And the same goes with the fitness industry. If you're not relevant, and if you're not, you know, if you don't have your face out there, that's also you're not going to be successful either. So you got to figure out a way what works best for you. As far as your social media and things like that, sad to say that it's all about social media.
Yeah.
It really doesn't even matter what you've accomplished. It's all about social media, which is somewhat sad.
It's strange to me. That's so strange to me,
yeah.
but I see what you're saying.
It's a shame. You know, it's a shame for me to see people that have accomplished all this stuff and they got nothing. And then to see people that's done absolutely nothing have stuff that the other people should have.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But then some people can argue and say, oh, hey, they did something. They built their social media. And yeah, you got a point. Yeah,
I guess that's true.
They did. But this is the fitness industry. What have they accomplished as far as fitness or competing or something? What have they done?
Right.
Nothing. They filmed themselves working out in the gym.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? They just happened to be in the right place at the right time and knew how to build their social media. And they were able to do something different to catch people's attention. So, yeah, I'll give them that. But still, when it comes to the fitness industry or competing, they've done nothing.
Right on. Well, listen, speaking of social media and the internet, everything else, let's get back to talking about your sponsors and about where people can reach out to you. Lay it all on me. Who are your sponsors? If you'd like to plug all of them, we'd love to have you do so. And let everybody know just all the different outlets where they can reach you.
JT-JoeThomas, JoeThomas.com. And that's my website. And then you would just, for the calendar I talked about earlier, if anybody's interested, is you just go to the shop section, and then my calendar is right there, and you just click and buy.
Now, I notice on your, you spell your name differently on Facebook. It's spelled T-O-M-A-S.
Yeah, because on my, well, I have two Facebook pages. I have what people call either, they call it different things, athlete page, page, or like page, whatever you want to call it. I have that page. And that's under Joe Thomas, spelled JoeThomas.
Oh, I see.
IFBB Pro.
Okay.
So it's Joe Thomas, IFBB Pro.
So go to that page. That's the one to reach you at?
Well no, actually, that's my like page.
Okay.
The page where I do most of my interactions, I would say, because on my like page, I have people that help me do that different stuff and stuff like that. So I do respond to people's messages and things like that, and I do post stuff on that page. But most of my interaction is on the page Joe Thomas, JoeTomas with no H.
Okay. Glad we could clear that up.
Yeah, and the reason why I do that is because if you type in Joe Thomas with an H, 40,000 different people will pop up.
That makes sense.
Right. So if you type in Joe Thomas with no H, I'm 90% of the time, I'm the first person that pops up.
Okay. So as far as your sponsors go, do you have anything coming up that you'd like to mention?
Let me give you my Instagram also. My Instagram, my Twitter, my Instagram, Twitter, and Snapchat are all JT_Joe Thomas with an H.
Okay.
And that's my Instagram, Snapchat, and Twitter.
Excellent. And are you going to be at the Arnold? You live there. You can't not be, I assume.
Yeah. I actually be there with one of my sponsors that will be there. I actually have three sponsors that are going to be there, but the one that I'll be at the Arnold with is Jantana.
Oh, nice.
Which, everybody knows who Jantana is. She's only been around for about 30 years.
Yeah, great products.
Yeah. I mean, Jantana product is the only product that I've ever used my entire time of competing. Yeah.
No kidding.
Yep. Yeah, I've never used anything else except for Jantana. And luckily I'm actually a sponsored athlete with her now. So that's great, that I'm able to, and this was just recently too. I've used her product for years before I ever was even a sponsored athlete with her.
No kidding.
So definitely, if you're going to be at the Arnold Classic, come by the Jantana booth and you'll see me there. But Jantana's booth is basically when you walk right in the front door, that's Jantana's booth right in the front.
Okay, nice.
And that's where I'll be.
Are you going to be there the whole time, or are you going to be there just for certain days?
Nope, I'll be there all 3 days.
Beautiful,
I'll be there
cool.
for most of the day, all 3 days. And I'll probably make an appearance at probably the other two sponsors that I have there. The other sponsor that I have there is Bolero.
Ah.
And Bolero. And Bolero is on Instagram. It's Bolero USA. And this is an awesome product. It's basically like almost, I guess, for instance, you can think of it like Crystal Light.
Yeah.
But instead of just Crystal Light, it has electrolytes in it, like almost like Gatorade powder or something like that.
Sure.
But it's sugar free and there's no calories in it. And the flavoring system that they have is amazing. I mean, there's like 52 different flavors. I mean, flavors that you would even imagine, like pear and like dragon fruit. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, they got all kind of flavors, man. And all the flavors, like for instance, the watermelon, it doesn't taste like that fake watermelon gum flavor that you get. It tastes like literally like someone blended up watermelon.
No kidding.
That's what it tastes like.
Yeah, no kidding. It's a really, I'll have to really try that product. One.
So Bolero USA, and then my other sponsor that is going to be there is Elite One Fit Gear, Gasp and Better Bodies.
Oh, perfect, man. Great companies.
Yeah. So the Gasp and Better Bodies clothing, it's super high. If anybody out there hasn't tried it, tried the clothes on or anything like that, you got to, because these are high. I mean, I know that, they're kind of expensive. But that's because they're high quality. I mean, if you buy a Better Body shirt, you're going to have it forever, pretty much. The stuff is great quality.
And listen, you only need so many pairs of jeans. So if you're going to buy a pair first, I think that they have a better cut if you have big legs, A. And then B, you only need so many pairs of jeans, so get a good pair,
Exactly, yeah. And usually, as long as you don't ruin your clothes, I mean, your jeans will last you a decade.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, great company.
So those are my three sponsors that are there. And I'll probably make an appearance at the other booths for a little while, but I'm there with Jantana.
Excellent.
And then a few of my other sponsors are Hot Bods Clothing. I've actually been with them since 2012.
Oh, right on.
Their clothing line is basically dress clothes that are created for athletic built people.
Absolutely.
So Yeah, so any sizes. It doesn't matter if you're 5'3" at, you know, 180 pounds, athletic built, you know, you're not going to be able to find clothes that fit you right.
No.
You know, if you're 5'10" at 240 pounds, athletic built, you're not going to find a dress shirt that fits you. See, the thing with Hotbox clothing is these are pre-tailored clothes, like jeans, dress shirts, things like that, like actually slacks and things like that, that are custom built for athletes, right, or bodybuilders, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
So I don't wear any other dress clothes except for Hotbox clothing, because they're the only ones that fit me right. And anybody out there with an athletic build knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah. You find out real quick when you go to put on a suit jacket or a button down shirt, you find out real quick, you know, like just how oddly we are shaped.
Exactly. I mean, well, how oddly we're shaped compared to what the majority of the clothes are made for.
Yeah, exactly. You know, yes, sir.
you put on a dress shirt, and if it fits your chest and your arms, it's going to be 4 feet wide around your waist.
And you'll have, and down to my knees.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. It's terrible. See, with Hotbox clothing, it's already tailored. They're already made to fit you perfectly, basically.
Perfect. That's
so
nice.
There's the website, hotboxclothing.com. You know, people can check out all the different clothing there. I'm all over the place on there, so you can see how they actually fit me. Those are a few of my sponsors. I also have another supplement sponsor, like a major supplement sponsor.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to mention that as of right now.
Okay.
So that's another major supplement sponsor. There's things moving and changing right now, so I probably really shouldn't say anything.
Interesting. Yeah. So it sounds like some good stuff is in the works.
I hope so. I hope so, yeah.
Well, I hope so too, man. I'm sure it's all going to be moving forward. We're about out of time here. Is there anything else that I'm missing?
No, I think we pretty much touched on a lot of stuff, quite a bit of stuff. We got a lot of information.
We did, man. I would love to have you back sometime, because I feel like I would have loved to really talk about the specific training that you have learned to do to work around your back. I feel like, to me, that's been a big part of my life. And I know, obviously, it has been for you. I know it's something that would be really important to other people. You know, my heart is you know, involved in bodybuilding. And I love talking about all this other stuff. I mean, we really couldn't have just done that show, I think, here. We would have been remiss to have left all this other stuff out. But at some point, man, I'd love to have you back just to really zone in on a specific topic like that. That'd be cool.
Absolutely. I'd love to be back on any topic. If you want to zone in on any topic, I'd love to be back. It was great.
All right, brother. Well, listen, Joe, I'm going to head over to the Jantana booth so that I can get a chance to meet you in person. And I'm looking forward to it, man.
Yeah, me too, man. Yeah, it'll be great to see you in person, yep.
All right, guys, for Advices Radio, I'm Scott McNally, and this has been IFBB Pro Joe Thomas.
Advices Radio Network.